This is Sid Roth saying, I have a vision. Now is the set time to blow the trumpet in Zion.
Blow a trumpet in Zion, sound it on the mountain. Blow a trumpet in Zion, for the day of the Lord is come.
Shalom, Mishpucha. Shalom, family. Mishpucha is a Hebrew word. It means family. And we're the Mishpucha, the family with a Jewish heart, made up of Jewish and non-Jewish people that are one new man in Messiah Jesus. Getting ready, Mishpucha, to blow the grandest shofar, or the grandest trumpet in Zion. We want everyone, everywhere, to hear the good news. We want everyone, everywhere, to be red hot for the Messiah. See, Peter Wagner made this statement. He says that if God were to send a major revival right now, the church would be ill-prepared to cope with the vast number of people seeking deliverance. That's quite a mouthful. So what he's saying is that we're about ready. He didn't say this. I'm saying this. We're about ready to have revival in this country. We're about ready to impact cities. But are the churches ready? What would a church do if a homosexual walks in and says, cast out this demon of homosexuality? What would the church do if a crack cocaine addict comes in and says, okay, I just got saved, set me free? What would the church do if a mentally deranged person wandered in? Because the revival is going to bring in everyone, everything. What would the average church do? Well, see, Peter Wagner says, and I quote again, that if God were to send a major revival right now, the church would be ill-prepared to cope with the vast number of people seeking deliverance. How about your pastor? How about you, pastor? What do you do with the people that are demon-possessed? You send them to a psychiatrist and have them control what is going on? Or do you set them free? I have a guest in the studio that's an expert because she's been set free. Her name is Kim Daniels from Jacksonville, Florida. She was raised in the area of Jacksonville that used to be called the Rat Bowl. It's really the Hood. And Kim, there's a very intriguing person I read about in your book, and her name is Big Mama. For those that don't know Big Mama, tell me about her.
Big Mama was my grandmother, and she met my grandfather in Rayford Prison, and she was a woman that went to prison for murder. She was a hardcore woman. She was blind in both eyes. And
How did she get blind?
She was blinded in one eye when she was fighting with, she, at this time back in then, she was dating a white man at that time. And, you know, they got in a fight and he hit her in the head with an axe and she was blinded in one eye. And later on when she got in a fight with my grandfather years later, she was swinging at him with an ice pick and fell off the porch and poked her other eye out. So she was blind in both eyes, both through fighting.
And from what I understand, you, she pretty much raised you, and you were her eyes, but would she actually have you direct her to someone so she could stab them?
My grandmother was a very hard woman, and she would literally tell me, and this is when I was maybe like 4 or 5 years old, to lead her up to the person that she was about to stab or whatever she was going to do to him and to back up.
What did you think? What does a child think? Well, do you have any recall of what did you think when you knew what she was doing?
I was very scared, holding a lot on the inside, but knowing better than to even let her hear me cry. And I would often go toward the person with my grandmother with tears rolling down my face, but I couldn't let her hear me. Make a whimper. Even when we had fights, street fights, my sister and I, we were told that if one fought, everybody fought. And there were times that if one of my sisters got into a fight, I would have to roll around in the dirt if I didn't fight, because that was the rule of the house.
Did you enjoy fighting?
I began to enjoy it. I didn't at first. I didn't like fighting. And then all of a sudden, I started by the time I was in the sixth grade, I was starting gangs and picking fights. So it's like, you know, in our group, you had to have at least one fight a week.
Now, to just kind of escape the life that you were in, you intentionally got pregnant.
Yes, I did. I was the homecoming queen of that. I was in the 12th grade. I was the president of student council.
How well did you do in school?
I had straight A's through the first three quarters at that time, and then I quit.
Why? I mean, didn't you? I mean, with those kind of grades, with that kind of notoriety, didn't you want to go on to college and do something with your life?
Well, I just wanted to get out of the house, and I knew how to average my grades, and I knew that with three quarters of straight A's, I would get straight E's, which we had at the time, not F's, and I would get C's, and I still graduated. And that's basically, I just wanted to get out.
So you had a baby, and what happened?
I had a baby. I moved to Oregon with his father, who was a very successful businessman, and he took care of me, and I just, you know, got tired of just sitting there, and I told him I had to do something, and I walked on at college, junior college. I could run fast all the time. I've always been known for being a fast runner. And I just walked into the track coach's office and told him, if I beat every one of the girls on your track team, would you give me a scholarship? That happened, and he did.
And then you went on to a regular college.
I went to Mount Hood Community College. I was out of my environment. It was an all-white college. There may have been 10 blacks in the entire school, and it was very different from me, but it was an escape. From the type of lifestyle I lived, but I excelled very well. I was on the honor roll, and I became the fastest woman in the nation in junior college in 1 year.
You actually qualify for the Olympics.
I qualified for the Olympic trials, but at the time, because of injury and just demonic oppression, I got hooked on anabolic steroids, and I got saved in that time, and God just snatched me away from it.
But let's not fast forward that far. How did you get into drugs?
Well, I was on cocaine in the streets. But even when I was in college, I was on anabolic steroids. So, are you saying the anabolic steroids are?
The cocaine.
It baited by the enemy. I had nothing to do with drugs. I did not grow up in my environment using drugs. When I went off to college, successful, there was one drug dealer who just continually offered me everything to try drugs. I mean, he stayed after me for months until finally he got me hooked.
So how did you go from being into drugs, being a star athlete, being bright, and then... you were addicted to drugs. How did you happen to go into the Army?
Well, something was always pulling on my soul. No matter how well I did, those generational curses, as I know now, always pulled me into trouble. And I was so comfortable, though I was a world-class sprinter, a straight-A student, in my spare time, I never did college activities. I never did high school activities. I always had to go to an environment where the drug addicts were. Where even as a little girl, my father has bars where homosexual men would dress like women and do shows that we call the sissy shows. So that was what I enjoyed doing. And so no matter where I went, I had to find the worst section of town. And when I got there, I could take a deep breath because I felt like I was at home. It was something always drawing me to that type of environment.
You told me something very strange happened to you when your grandmother died, when Big Mama died, as far as picking up that same spirit that was on her came on you.
Yeah, when my grandmother died, it seemed like I just went to another level. All the things that she used to do, literally, I could, when someone bothered me or it may have been something that I could have walked away from, I would literally hear my grandmother's voice say, pick this up, stab them, hit them, cut them, beat them, you know, don't let them get away with it. I would literally hear my grandmother's voice.
Jesus, God, where did he fit in at that time?
We never knew anything about Jesus. My family was not even a church-going family. I had friends that went to church, and I would visit with them sometime, but we were clearly And throughout my generation, I didn't know any relatives. I guess we were just a heathen family.
So things were not going too well. And literally, did you hear a voice for you to join the army?
I was not saved. I had begun to pull guns on big time, terrible people on the streets that you just don't do that with. I had no fear of nothing or nobody.
What did you think would happen if you died?
I never thought about it.
Did you think you could die?
I never thought about death.
Huh.
I just thought about living and doing what I wanted to do and moving anybody out of my way that got in the way. But all of a sudden, my father, who was a racketeer, and I mean, he ran all kind of bars and illegal things in our city. When he came up to me and said, I never thought you would turn out to be this way, when all of his other children were all bad, something clicked on the inside of me when he said, if you continue to do the things that you do, I'll denounce you as my daughter. And he would never say nothing because we live like that. So I was that bad.
Hmm. So were people after you because of what you were doing?
I'm sure. More so in the college days, my husband and I, it's the grace of God that from the bad deals that we've done. And
you should have been dead.
some of the people that we dealt with were like on the 10 most wanted list for the FBI. They were killed. I mean, people that we immediately worked for, they would just someone just walk up in their yard and shoot their head off. And, you know, my husband and I, we just thank God today that whom the Son makes free is free indeed.
But was it a literal voice or just an impression to join the army?
To join the army, it was a strong impression. It's just like something was telling me, run to the army. I mean, when I went to the army, I passed the test so high, they were so excited, the recruiters, but I told them I have to get the first plane going. And I was so messed up until I was doing cocaine when the recruiter picked me up. But when I got to the station, I had to take a urinalysis. I literally switched the urine with some of the girls in the bathroom. That's the only way I got into the military. And when I was so high, when they interviewed me, they asked me if I ever done drugs. I told them, yeah, cocaine. But they just wouldn't let me be a military police. They still let me come in. They just couldn't believe it. I was just that bound. I was just like, yeah, I've been doing cocaine all night.
Huh. And they let you in?
Yeah, they let me in. They called in some people and said, man, this girl just came and told us she been doing cocaine. And they let me in. They just wouldn't let me in a top secret position like I was going for military police.
I'm speaking to Kim Daniels, Mishpocha, and we're making available her book, Against All Odds. Do you know someone that has all odds against them? Do you know someone that says, I can't, I can't, I can't? Well, Kim Daniels had every strike against her a human could have. And what she's doing today is setting the captives free with the most amazing ministry that we'll tell you about later on this week. We're asking $12 postage paid for the book, Against All Odds.
If you would like to receive a complimentary copy of our bi-monthly teaching newsletter, cassette catalog, or information about becoming Mishpocha, write to me, Sid Roth, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia 31521. Or call our order-only line, 1-800-548-1918. To place a credit card order, call anytime, 1-800-548-1918. For all other calls, the number is 912-265-2500. That's 912-265-2500. For a cassette tape of this week's broadcast, send $5 to Sid Roth, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia 31521. Look us up on the web, www.sidroth.org. That's www.sidroth.org.